Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined as always by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Scott, I'm doing great. UC is 5-0 for the first time since 2009. How are you feeling?
With 5-0 on the docket, how could you be like anything like less than thrilled? Like another dominant win that got added up on the docket. If you count the Miami game, which I'm sure we do, that's like another blowout to go with the blowout of Alabama A&M. Game that was never in doubt against UConn. Like a lot of big plays on offense. The defense was pretty great. It's just like fun to watch UC just go on the road and destroy somebody again. Because it's been a long time since they've done that. A really long time.
Yeah, the last time they beat an FBS opponent by at least 42 points was Akron in September 17th of 2011 when they beat him 59-14. So, yeah, that was a really long time. Like, we're used to UC beating up on FCS schools, but at least in the Tuberville era, there was never really a game where UC was dominant on both sides of the ball. And the game kind of played out like we had projected. We figured that David Pindle was going to, you know, make a few plays in the first half, and he did, and he got UConn on the board first. But UC, just outside of that opening drive or two, really took it to UConn on both sides of the ball. And you're right, it was just so refreshing to see. Like, it was almost refreshing to the point of boring near the end of the game. Like, hell, Jake Sopko took a couple of snaps in the fourth quarter. UC really treated it like another FCS win, and That's exactly what you want to see out of a program that's digging itself out of the dark ages.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like this is like the biggest sign that like UC is back to being competitive. Like even more than like going to UCLA and winning, like blowing out a team that you were already like a pretty big favorite over. Like 17's not like the Alabama numbers, but it's still like really big for UC, who hasn't been that big a favorite in a few years. Like, just to come out and just dominate. And, like, especially the third quarter. Like, come out after halftime and, like, put together another, like, big explosive play, like, right off the bat. Then just, like, crush UConn's will and make it 42-7 after the end of the third quarter. It's like, I really don't know, like, what more you could ask for with that start of the second half.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where before this game, we were kind of trying to figure out where does UC get slotted in the AAC hierarchy. We knew that they were one of the better teams out of the East. They've, up until that point, separated themselves in terms from the eye test standpoint from the UConns and the ECUs and maybe to the Temples. Seems like they had started to move their way into that UCF-USF echelon in the East. That game on Saturday completely cemented themselves in that conversation with UCF-USF and themselves. I mean, it's a three-horse race for the East title, right? And that's exactly where you'd like to see the Fickell era in year two. I think a lot of us have thought this was going to come next season, but it is damn refreshing to see something that happened on Saturday in year two.
Yeah, it's like you just said, like we were like cautiously optimistic about this year. Like we thought like six wins would be
right.
Great. And like they're already 5-0. And like, as you mentioned, like they're a legit contender. Like I think you could even make the case that they're the second spot in the East behind Central Florida. Like, granted, like, the second spot in the East isn't, like, very close to where Central Florida has been, at least, like, their level so far. But still, like, having a chance to sneak out the division is something that we didn't see at all. And it's really, really, like, it's impressive. Like, the whole team has just bought in so much. And the coaching staff, like, we gave them a lot of flack last year for some of their decisions. And, like, it just seems like they've become more confident in themselves too. Like it's like hard to like remember like Marcus Freeman was a first time defensive coordinator, and like
true.
His defense has improved so much. And Denbrock caught a lot of flack last year, and like I think deservedly so. But like then, like their aggression, like it, going for it like at the 30 on well, like 4th and 3 up 28-7, like that seems like a call they wouldn't have made last year. And of course, like it was UConn's defense, but still, like that just that aggression of like going for the first down on 4th and short, I really liked, and they went for it like 3 times on 4th down. Which I think was really good. I like how this team is trending, like, just overall.
Yeah, it's one of those situations, like we were kind of talking about earlier in the year, that this coaching staff has revived the swagger in UC football on both sides of the ball, and we're starting to see that grow week to week. Like, the staff understands what they have on the field. They understand what their players are facing on the other side of the ball, and they can make a quick, instant determination of whether or not their 11 are better than the opposing team's 11, and if they are, like we saw on Saturday, they're going to step on the throat of the opponent and never let up. And that's the kind of attitude that we've been waiting for this team since, hell, the Butch Jones era. Like, it's been a long, long time, and it's an attitude that's going to take them really, really far. At least under Fickle for however long he's at UC. Hopefully it's a long time, but, you know, let's not even start that conversation. But, I mean, Jesus, like, after that first drive by UConn, I mean, UC was averaging over 8 yards per play. They put up 659 yards of total offense. They really did whatever they wanted to do to UConn's defense. Now, this is a much maligned defense that averaged something like 664 yards per game. Which I think we talked about in the primer last week is 100 yards worse than the second worst team in defense. So it's not like they were going out there and facing Alabama. But to your point, they recognized that they were facing a lesser unit and attacked and attacked and attacked and would not let off the accelerator.
Yeah, like 320 rushing yards, 6 yards a carry, like unbelievable. Like, when's the last... I wish I'd researched when the last time they put up that type of number was.
I mean, you probably look at any FCS game, right? Like, in the last decade, you could probably pick any FCS game, but, like, what's an FBS game? Like, maybe that Akron game? I don't know. A Miami-Ohio game? I don't know.
Like, it was complete domination, like, every side of the ball. Like, the passing game was great. Like, 11.7 yards an attempt. Like 14.7 yards of completion. Like whatever they wanted to do, like offensively they did. And like that's still like offense is still like the big question, because like Ritter still, like, outside of the Ohio game, like they still haven't been like in a situation where they've really had to like prove themselves like late in the game. But like actually against like an actual good defense.
Yeah, okay. I was about to jump in there, but go ahead.
But, like, just how they've played, like, you can't doubt the stats anymore. And the numbers seem legit. Like, he's just so confident, like, in his first year starting. And I think it really just flows through the offense.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where we've kind of understood what the offense can bring to the table, and it's really refreshing to see them. We were kind of talking about this last week. Who's going to really shine in the receiving core? I think you had Rashard Medaris or Thomas Geddes. I had Khalil Lewis. It turned out to be the tight end, Josiah DeGuara, who up until Saturday was really used as kind of an outlet pass to get 10 yards, a quick 10 yards, in the flat, and he was basically using his size to muscle over DBs to get past the first down marker. On Saturday, they were using him in the seam. They were throwing him down the sidelines. His touchdown pass was the longest of the day. He had 5 receptions for 112 yards and a touchdown overall, and that's a performance that neither of us really saw coming. And it's just another lever that Denbrock can pull in case, you know, he needs to exploit the defense. And it's just another refreshing sign of an offense that's continuing to blossom before our eyes.
Yeah, especially since so much attention has to be given to Lewis and, like, Geddes and Medaris. Like, you have to respect those guys' ability to make big plays. Because even last year, they all made big plays. especially Lewis. Like, he's had kind of like a rough season stat-wise, but just his presence has opened things up for everybody else. Like, Deguara has just been, like, phenomenal. He's been their best receiver by far this year. It's, like, really great to see, like, him, like, used by his time, like, being, like, the backup tight end the last few years. And then to really explode, because he hadn't done too much. He had, what, like 100 yards last year?
Yeah.
And he's just been such a key part of the offense. It's like hard to picture their offense without the tight end doing well. When the tight end had been a forgotten piece the last, like, well, like 5 years, ever since Kelsey left.
Right. Yeah, and it's one of those situations where we're kind of worried about, okay, are they going to overuse Mike Warren? Are they going to only lean on runs up the middle with him and a solid offensive line? And we're seeing now that Des Ridder can distribute the ball to a multitude of options and not lean on Warren if they don't need to. Now, Warren had a great game on Saturday again, 13 for 106, average 8.2 yards per carry, had a couple of touchdowns. I hate to say it, kind of a ho-hum performance out of him because that's the bar he's set. But even with that performance, they still had 339 yards passing. Like, they could do just whatever they wanted to do on through the air or on the ground.
And Warren had, like, 40 yards receiving.
Yep. Yeah, he did. I'm just, like, giddy at the fact that, like, this offense, the possibilities of this offense are endless. And, you know, we're not talking about seniors all over the place. Des Ridder is a redshirt freshman. Warren is a sophomore. Deguara, I think, is a sophomore. Khalil Lewis is a senior, but Geddes and Medeiros are going to be around for a little while. And then Malik Mooj had a great catch coming into the game with the second teamers down the sidelines, and he's a freshman. And Jason Jackson is a true freshman. And it's just the possibilities for this offense are really limitless, it seems. Now, to your point, they haven't really been challenged defensively. But until then, let's just keep riding the ride.
Well, yeah, definitely. I didn't mean to put them down like that much. Because, like, they didn't, like, make the big, big drive last week against Ohio to, like, take the lead. But, like, even though it's, like, that drive, it didn't seem like they had any, like, opposition. Which says a lot about the offense. Like, that's a compliment.
It's, yeah.
You knew they were going to score. And, like, they went down and just executed the whole way. In the second half of that game, like we talked about last week. And, like, just, like, the first half of this game, it seemed like a lot of long drives, the first half. And then in the second half, like, big play after big play. And just, like, getting the ball down the field, like, breaking UConn's spirit. And it seemed like they did that last week, too. Like, they just broke Ohio's spirit. And once they did that, it's like they couldn't be stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was just, go ahead.
And it's been a long time since we've seen, like, a UC team, like, at least play with that kind of confidence offensively for, like, four quarters. So it seems like if they hit a wall the last few years, like, they'd get down, and then they would just stutter out and not finish. And this team converts third downs. Like, they finish in the red zone, like, unbelievably effectively. And, like Ritter's been lights out, like, the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, they're 21 of 20. Jesus, they're 21 of 22 scores within the red zone, 95% conversion rate, 14th in the country. They're getting touchdowns 20 of those 22 times. Like, they're not just getting into the red zone and scoring, settling for field goals. Like, I almost felt bad for Kobe Smith for having to ride the pine most of the game. But they know how to get into the end zone. They can do it in a million different ways, and It's scary to think how high the ceiling is for this offense.
So, and, like, one of the big problems with the offense last year is wasn't even, like, so much the red zone. It was like they would, like, stutter out between, like, the 20 and the 30.
Yep.
And force, yeah, like, their really not great kicking game last year into action. And, like, this year they've attempted 2 field goals. And if you, like, you're unsure about your kicking game, which, like, they clearly are in that aspect, like, being able to get in the red zone and finish drives is exactly what you have to do. And, like, they've been, what, like a top 30 offense, like, in the red zone. Like, that's something that, like, it's just great to watch after, like, the misery we've gone through the last few years.
Yeah, it helps that they have a more explosive offense as well. I mean, they don't this offense doesn't seem like it's going to stutter. They might for a couple of drives, but they understand how to break out. I mean, they're seventh in the country in yards in plays of 10 yards or more with 96. They've really been able to move the ball pretty well both inside the red zone and outside of it. And if they need to get into the red zone, they've proven with Michael Warren they can just keep inching their way into the red zone. Or I'm sorry, into the end zone. And yeah, it's something that I'm hoping that we can finally put behind us. Those stuttering offenses that we've seen for the last few years.
And it helps that you have a quarterback that really can make a lot of plays with his legs. Like,
yep.
Because Hayden Moore would be good for like the occasional big run. But like Ritter just adds another dimension where he can make plays, like, getting out of the pocket. And, like, he's had to. And, like, their sacks have dropped, like, quite a bit. Like, some of that, it might be due to opponents, but some of that is him being able to, like, read where the pressure is coming from and getting out of the way and, like, extending plays with his legs.
Yeah, it's just, like, another element, and it's... I don't know what else more, like, there's more to say about the offense. You know, you had a Hayden Moore situation where he had years under his belt. He had the ability to lead an offense somewhat effectively, but Des Ritter just brings a different element mentally and physically to the position that we haven't seen since, like, I don't know, Gunnar Kiel, maybe? Like Zach Kolaros? It's just... His ability to get it done on both with both his arms and his legs, and doing it with his arms accurately as well. Like, he had some well-placed passes. I mean, granted, receivers were running all over that secondary in space without anybody around them, but when he had to make a tight pass, and he showed it against Ohio as well, he was able to do it.
Like, 8 touchdowns to 1 pick. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Before turning the page to Tulane, do we need to talk about some sad news, or are you going to go?
Yeah, I was going to say the one thing like Ritter like, needs to be a little better at is like not fumbling as much. But like that's something he'll get better with. Like once he watches the film, he would think.
Did he fumble?
Yeah, he lost a fumble in that game.
Well, okay, because Ja'Kari Robinson. threw the ball at Michael Warren in his first snap after Garrett Campbell went down.
True. I thought he had a fumble in one of the other earlier games. The ESPN stats show it.
He maybe lost a fumble. I can't remember, but I think he may have lost a fumble and recovered it. I'm picturing something like that happening.
It's definitely nitpicking. But he's like been so good that you have to nitpick to find like any flaws in his game so far,
right?
Which is really great.
Which is a good thing. Yeah, that's a good thing.
after like the last 2 years of talking about that position, it's good to celebrate that position.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the sad news.
Yeah. So we saw it on Saturday. Garrett Campbell went down with a leg injury, with an ankle injury, more specifically. Fickell confirmed yesterday that the UC starting center is going to be out for the season, so it's Ja'Kari Robinson's offensive line for the rest of the year. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Like losing your center is like one of the like worst things to do. I mean, with your offensive line, because that's the captain of your line, pretty much.
Yep.
Like you hope it's a situation like a few years ago when UC had like the center. Go down and like then Deshaun Bond stepped in and then he was the center like the rest of his career. Like you hope it's a situation where you can just fill it in seamlessly. Like as the schedule starts to get tougher, like you kind of think people are going to try to maybe poke and prod at the offense. And if the line like stumbles a little bit, that probably wouldn't be great with like how big the numbers they put up. But like, I remain like confident like in the offense that they can hopefully like patch the hole and continue to work.
Yeah, I mean, we just alluded to it. The first snap that Jakari Robinson came in to play after Campbell went down was a shotgun snap, and he launched it more towards Michael Warren standing next to Des Ridder than Ridder itself. I mean, it went down as a fumble for Ridder, but, I mean, that was a poor snap. And at that point, everyone in the UC fan base just clutched their face in their palms and just shook their head, just thinking about the possibilities going forward. Now, Jakari Robinson is a redshirt freshman. He came out of high school as a pretty, I mean, underwhelming recruit in terms of rankings. I mean, that doesn't say anything towards his talent, just because offensive line rankings are all over the board. But a two-star recruit. But people were saying coming into camp that he had the possibility of being a three- or four-year starter at center. And in the second half, we saw a lot of that out of him. And one of the things we were worried about was a repeat of that one play, and he was pretty damn perfect in that second half playing the center position. We just kind of have to hope that – you'd be cautiously optimistic, I guess, is a better word – that he can be a good enough fill-in for Campbell going forward.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the key. It's, like, be good enough to where he can, like, at least be solid at the center spot. Because, like, if you have a hole in the middle of your offensive line, like, it doesn't really matter how good the rest of the guys are. Like, you're in trouble because you have to compensate for your center. And that just changes all your assignments. And, like, maybe you have to keep a tight end in. And UC's played spread so much. Like, that one little thing could change the whole offense completely.
Right.
And after the last couple of years where, like, Hayden Moore was just, like, getting, like, murdered. Like, you hope, like, that they can keep it going. And he can fill in admirably.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be something they're going to have to watch. I mean, I don't know. You don't replace Garrett Campbell at center with just any player. And Jakari Robinson, he's young, he's big, he's got upside. But, I mean, he's not Garrett Campbell quite yet. Maybe he will be at some point, but he's just – it's going to take a little bit of time.
I would say the one good thing about, like not good thing, but, like, the timing, like, was he got to play quite a bit against Alabama A&M.
True.
And then he got to get some reps against UConn. Like, at least he's gotten to play this year, and he's not being, like, thrown into the fire, like, completely untested.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Other pretty disappointing news, but not necessarily surprising. Jared Doakes has officially been sidelined for the rest of the season because he's going to have groin surgery, which just sounds just all kinds of painful. Scott, thoughts? And I have multiple questions.
But first off the bat, like, obviously it, like, sucks that he's out for the year. So, yeah, he was really impressive last season. But, like, having, like, said that, it's like he would, like, rather he take his time and, like, get back and come back next year, if he comes back next year, which I guess could be a question as well. But he'll still be a sophomore next season. But, like, with how Warren has played, it's like how much of a timeshare would that have been, like, anyway? It's like when, like, Warren's, like, being, like, a superstar first team all-conference running back, like, I think you can afford to, like, have Doakes be out, but like, it does hurt your overall depth, and, like, now you're throwing, like, true freshmen in the mix, like Taylor Booz in the mix, if something happens to Warren.
Yeah, I think just the lack of experience depth behind Warren is a little concerning, and I asked this on Twitter after the game. Tavion Thomas is in game three. He's played three games this year. Charles McClelland has played four. Back to Saturday, if Doakes is out for a while, or, I mean, in this case, the entire season, do you keep on keeping on with Thomas and McClelland as a running back rotation behind Warren and not slap a redshirt on either of them?
I think you...
I'm asking you, Scott.
I think at this point, like, you have to. at least with one of them. Like, maybe, like, it seems like they've, like, been leaning more towards Thomas. Like, so you may be, like, redshirt McClellan. But, like, with, like, how, like, low the depth is, I kind of think you have to keep them both this season. Like, that probably wasn't in their plans. But, like, plans change.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think you have to. I mean, I think you just keep going with the plan that's working. Like, Morin takes 70% of the reps, 80% if you're in a close game, and you mix in Thomas and McClellan just to spell them every couple of times. And really, in this day and age where true freshmen are playing more and more and more, especially when you're looking at a earlier in a situation with Cincinnati where the talent level coming in to the Fickell era was so lackluster, and Fickell immediately upgraded with young talent from the high school level. He's got to just play whoever's better. Like, I mean, that's the reason why Thomas and McClellan are playing more than Boos, who's a junior. And it's sort of a shame, the fact that they won't be able to exercise the new redshirt rule on Thomas and McClellan. I mean, they still can, but they probably won't at this point. But I mean, Thomas is averaging almost 7 yards a carry. McClellan's almost 6 yards a carry. Just do what is working. I mean, they're undefeated. They could play for an AAC championship a year earlier than any one of us had thought. I don't want them to mess with the situation that's going so well.
Yeah, definitely not. And our big worry about Warren has been his really high workload. It's like, I think at worst, like, you could redshirt McClellan, since, like, he's only had stats in two games. He's played in all of them, I believe, but he's, like, only gotten carries in two. So, like, if you need to put him on the ice the rest of the season, I think you could, like, afford to do that, since he's only gotten carries in the blowouts.
Right.
But, like, Thomas is like ingrained as the second back, so, like, he has to, like, step up. Like, he's gonna get, like, a big opportunity, like, being Warren's backup. Like, granted, Warren's getting, like you said, like 70-75% of the carries, and, like, even when he's out, like, they really haven't run the ball when he's been out of the game. So he's just gonna have to stop being a freshman, really, and, like, do what Warren and Dokes did last year when Mike Boone got injured. Like, try to take the mantle and to make yourself, like, in the conversation to be the lead back next season.
Yeah, and it's not a situation where, like, it's going to hurt him in terms of, like, visibility and stuff. Like, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb out of Georgia split reps last season, and they both went in, like, the first couple of rounds of the NFL draft. So it's not like a situation where he needs to see himself as a backup to Warren. He could see himself as a 1B to Michael Warren's 1A. And he is a year behind Warren in terms of eligibility. So, I mean, by his senior year, he could be established as the number one guy, splitting time with McClellan if he needs to, and maybe taking 60-70% of the reps, something like that. So, yeah, I think it's a situation where you keep playing them where you need to be or where you need to, and you just worry about the eligibility and eventually graduating two senior running backs, 3 years from now. Like, hell, they have Ryan Montgomery coming in too, who's probably going to redshirt next year, and he could potentially probably backfill them at some point as well.
Yeah, and just, like, what we see with running backs, especially, like, these days, it's like you really don't have, like, one lead back carry you that much. Like, you mentioned Georgia, like, there were their two, like, big backs last year. Like, Alabama has, like, 1,000 running backs, and, like, they all get carries. It's like, it really, like, doesn't matter who your lead back is if you have a lot of depth and, like, a lot of different options to throw in there. It's like, if you're, like, patient and, like, you work hard, you're gonna get a chance. And with, like, Thomas's, like, big runs this season, like, he's definitely, like, earned carries, and, like, he's earned confidence in the coach from the coaching staff. So, like, losing Dokes, like, is, like, not ideal, but, like, if he can come back next year healthy and, like, 100%, instead of, like, trying to rush back this season and, like, potentially playing, like, under 100%, Which it kind of seemed like it was like Mike Boone's problem, like his junior year, where he was like
Yeah.
banged up the whole season and his stats like faltered.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I mentioned Ryan Montgomery. I don't see him on the roster. He came in the same class as Tavion Thomas and Charles McClellan, but I don't see him on the roster anywhere. Okay, I guess that takes a little more investigating. But, I mean, the point still stands. I mean, just it doesn't hurt anybody to have them continue to play throughout the season and get reps, because all you're really doing, I mean, at worst, one of them gets injured. At best, they are building and building and building their confidence and experience to lead this team after Warren and Dokes leave. So.
And like, I guess like the biggest like concern you would have is like say like Thomas has like a giant like back half of the season, and like he like establishes himself as like a clear guy who's gonna get a ton of carries next year, along with Warren, who's like already had like a hell of a year. Like then like maybe you lose Dokes, but like maybe you don't, and you have like three like top tier backs and like. That guy who's shown flashes like McClellan coming back next year.
Right. Right.
But like roster attrition happens with everybody. Like you can't really like live in fear of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things that, like we talked about, they will plan for it in a couple of years, but for now, I mean, they have an undefeated football team with a stable of running backs that most teams in the conference would beg to have.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I think anybody in the league, like even Central Florida would take Warren and like Thomas as their backs.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, is that it for the bad news, or can we turn our attention to the Tulane Green Wave?
Yeah, let's look forward to Tulane, who's been kind of a weird team this year, where they've had a couple like good performances at home. None better than their last game, where it's Friday night, like ESPN, they destroy Memphis, 40-24. Like that game wasn't even that close. Like, just a complete domination after, like back-to-back losses to UAB and Ohio State on the road. Yeah, it's like a kind of like a weird team, this Tulane bunch. What are like your overall thoughts on the Green Wave, and has your like feeling about this game changed at all?
Yeah, I feel like their game, their to your point, dominance over Memphis really says more about Memphis than it does Tulane. I mean, Memphis has been giving up points in bunches this year. I mean, they lost to Navy 22-21. They gave up 22 to Georgia State, even though they put up 59. They gave up 35 to South Alabama, even though they put up 52. As soon as they found a team that was at least somewhat comparable in terms of talent, they faltered hard against Tulane on the road. I mean, giving up 40. Now, Tulane's—they got that feisty, like shotgun veer offense that Rich Rod used to run in West Virginia. Like, it's just a torment UC fan back in the day. But it's that type of offense where the quarterback can sit in the shotgun and has the option to run it himself, throw it. Or he has two potential RPO options in terms of like a receiver or a running back. I mean, there's so much going on with that offense that it's hard to kind of make sense of it defensively. And it 100% exploited Memphis for what they are defensively, which is not a very good football team. And in that sense, Tulane kind of just is what we sort of expected them to be, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like the running game, like against Memphis, 318 yards, and they ran for four touchdowns. Like that part has to like worry you a little bit. Just like any time a team pops off like that, because like it just shows that they're capable of it. They may not do it again, but like they have that type of potential. And, like I think that's the thing. Like what you mentioned with their offense, it's like kind of like so dependent on like Banks to have a good game. Like where if he struggles, they're like just not great, and like he's been kind of up and down this year. And so like going on the road, I don't he hasn't really played well on the road. Probably his like whole career, really. Like, especially this season. Like, he was terrible at UAB. 7-24. Like, 7-24 is not good.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it all really kind of comes down to that running back staple. I mean, Darius Bradwell and Corey Dopey. I mean, Bradwell's averaging 6.1 yards per carry. Dopey's averaging over 10. Like, this offense is built around getting running back yards in bunches. Like, Jonathan Banks doesn't really do much. He just kind of manages the offense. I mean, he himself is the second leading rusher in terms of attempts on Tulane, and he's only averaging over about a yard a carry. I mean, they run the ball two-thirds of the time. So, I mean, that's the way you stop them. You treat them like a Navy or Air Force or Army-type option offense that has the ability to pass it a little better than those types of teams. And that's kind of really where you start.
Yeah, definitely. If you take out sacks, he's averaging nearly 5 yards a carry, but he's been sacked 17 times, which says a lot about...
That's just an asterisk. It's 1 yard per carry. Yard per carry.
But being sacked 17 times says a lot about their offensive line. And, like, of course, they played, like, one of the best teams in the nation on the road. But still, like, the Bearcats' defense has shown a lot of pressure this season. Like, we know how good the defensive line is. Like, if you can let, like, Broughton loose and, like, have, like, Wright flying in from the linebacker spot, I think you can get a lot of pressure on Tulane and, like, really make them one-dimensional. And if you make them one-dimensional, like, they're like anybody else, like, they're susceptible to getting beat by double digits.
Yeah, and it's one of those – one of my main concerns going into this game is something that you brought up a couple of weeks ago – is offenses exploiting the over-aggression of a very good UC front seven. Like, Cortez Broughton's going to get in the backfield. Kimoni Fitz is going to get into the backfield. They're probably going to send linebackers. I mean, that's one of the things we've loved about Marcus Freeman's defense this year, is that they have the confidence to be aggressive defensively in critical situations. That was exploited to a large degree against Ohio. A.J. Ouellette ran all over them because he was slipping out of the backfield, slipping past the front line, and there was nobody there to stop him except for a safety because all the linebackers were crowded around the quarterback. I mean, they didn't have Perry Young in that game. We talked about this. I think if Perry Young was in that game, a lot of those 10 to 15-yard runs are stopped after a couple of yards, but it's still something to keep an eye on because this is a team that's gonna exploit that over-aggression.
Oh, definitely, and you know they're game planning for that exact same thing. Like, their offense isn't, like, wildly different than Ohio's offense. And, like, their quarterback is a lot more seasoned than Ohio's quarterback was. It's like, I think, like, in that sense, you definitely have to be a little bit concerned. And, like, Tulane, like, last season didn't really have a ton of trouble moving the ball. They had a lot of trouble finishing drives, which really cost them the game because they couldn't finish a drive at the end and they had to try a short field goal that they missed. It's like, you know, like, Tulane has, like, a lot of heart at the very least. Like, their talent is, I don't think is that really up to, like, I don't think their talent is really that good to begin with. Like, they play hard and they have a good coach. Like, anytime you have, like, those two things, like, you have a small chance.
No, yeah, Tulane is good because they run an offense also that nobody ever sees. Like, Memphis, as soon as they saw them, they were like, oh, shit, they got two running backs that are running all over us. And, oh, by the way, the quarterback can run a little bit, too. The talent level, I think, to your point, is definitely in UC's favor. It's just going to come down to kind of those X's and O's and, you know, containing a very good staple in the backfield.
Tulane has two receivers who have pretty much all their catches and, like, all six of their touchdowns. It's like Darnell Mooney, who's been, like, really great. 36 targets, 26 catches. It's, like, really amazing. Especially his yards per target at 13 yards a target. It's like, you know he's going to try to stretch the field. And same with Ian Quade, their other, like, top receiver. 32 targets, 19 catches. Like, 345 yards, two touchdowns. Like, so, you have to, like, try to box those guys in and make Banks go to his other reads, which have been very unsuccessful for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, we can probably expect a lot of play action off of that to try to get Mooney and Kalei down the field. But you just got to hope that the defensive line and the front seven get there fast enough. And that's I think that's one of the things we're going to see in this game. I think it's going to be a lot of, like, dinking and dunking. Like, UC stops them for 2 or 3 yards, get them to kind of like a third and medium. And then it's kind of a coin flip whether or not those running backs, you know, get out into space for a 20-yard gain. UC stops them, or the quarterback finds those two guys downfield. And I think that's just going to be like the rinse and repeat throughout the game. Like, I don't think Tulane's going to run over UC's defense like they did Memphis. UC's defense is just so far and away better than that. But I think it could be those situations, sort of like what we saw against Ohio. You know, a potential 2-yard gain was turned to 10 or 15 because UC was either over-aggressive or didn't wrap up and tackle and bring the guy to the ground.
Yeah, and, like, that's one of the things you really can't do against this type of offense.
Yeah.
Like, just looking at, like, through Tulane's numbers, like, between the 20 and 30... like, their offense is terrible. Like, if they get in the red zone, like, they've been good. But if you can, like, stop them in that type of range, like UC did last year, I think, like, that's a major key for your defense. Because, like, Tulane's offense has been, like, pretty great. Their defense has been really terrible. But, and if you can get pressure on them and, like, put them in third and long, like, keep them out of the red zone, like, force them to, like, kick or go for it, like, at the 30, I think, like, you're in really good shape.
Yeah.
They've only tried 3 field goals as well. Like, they're terrified to kick.
Yeah, and it's one of those issues that face that a lot of these ground-based offenses face. You know, once things get condensed near the red zone and the running game is struggling and you have to pass the ball on, like, 3rd and 7 at, like, the 13-yard line, you're not used to doing that. Like, you're used to getting into third and manageable situations and inching your way into the end zone. As soon as you have to condense the field and are forced to throw on 3rd and long close to the red zone or close to the end zone, I mean, that's going to play into UC's favor, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Like, absolutely. I mean, it's like, you know what, like, pretty much you know what to expect from Tulane. And, like, you just have to be ready, like, for what they're going to throw at you. Because they're going to throw, like, a lot of different things, a lot of different looks. And we just saw with, like, a talented Memphis team, like, if you're not ready, like, you're going to get big plays thrown on you all day.
Absolutely.
But, like, this has been, like, a really good defense, like, the entire season. So I'm not, like, overly concerned about, like, that part. I'm, like, more concerned about, like, if Tulane plays ball control and, like, keeps the ball for, like, almost like Ohio did, just keeps UC's offense off the field for, like, a half. Because, like, that, something like that really, like, can tilt the game towards the underdog. And Tulane is, what, like, a touchdown underdog.
Yeah, they are. I think they open as like an 8-point. They're kind of slipping to 7, but I mean, yeah, basically a touchdown. And I think that's kind of where I would predict it. I think it would be something like, you know, UC like 31, Tulane 21, 24. Like, I think you're right. Like, the ball control the ball control offense that Tulane's going to run, and, you know, to an extent, UC runs that a lot too. Is going to keep the score really, really low, or lower than what it might have been. So I'm thinking, like, yeah, like a 31-21, 31-24, in that kind of range.
I'm going to go a little lower. I'll go, like, 28-17.
Okay. Yeah, Tulane's defense is not very good. I mean, they're 71st in S&P Plus. They are okay. I mean, they're 101st in total defense allowed. So, I mean, they played Ohio State, so, I mean, that's skewed heavily. But, like, to your point, it's going to be, like, a very much ball control, like, longer drives kind of game. Like, there's not going to be a lot of possessions in this game like it was against UConn.
Yeah, 'cause I think that's going to go both ways, where both teams trying to keep the ball away from the other. And look, from what we just saw in the UConn game, like if the Bearcats can chip away at you, they'll chip away at you with those 12 play drives. And because that, then that opens up the big plays in the running game and the passing game. And I think they'll definitely hit a couple. I'm really interested to see what UC does in the third quarter. Because like the UConn game, they were winning anyway. But they put that game away in the third quarter. And Ohio, like they like made their big strive to win that game in the third quarter. So it'd be like interesting to see if they can like keep that like type of like out of the halftime surge up.
Yeah, I mean, it's to this point this season, UC's proven to make halftime adjustments and carry them to victory when they needed to. Like you mentioned, the Ohio game. This is going to be a situation where UC's probably going to be within a touchdown of Tulane going into halftime. And yeah, to your point, that third quarter is going to be uber critical to determine the end of the game. Damn. I mean, we'd hope that UC's up by a few touchdowns by halftime, but I mean, that's kind of wishful thinking. It seems like when we look at like the numbers on both sides.
But we can hope and we can wish.
Yeah,
because this Bearcats team has pretty much been like a second half team all season. Like the second half they dominated UCLA. Second half against Miami, like they dominated that game. It's like conditions like aside, like they just kicked Miami's ass the second half. Like Alabama A&M, that doesn't really count. But like Ohio and like UConn, they dominated the second half. And UConn didn't even score the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, we'll see. I'm still going to stick to the 31-24. I think it's going to be a little higher scoring than what you're thinking, but I can definitely, I definitely see your side of it. Just with the time of possession, with the ball control offenses, it could be a little on the lower side.
I just have a feeling we're going to see long drives in this game.
Yeah.
And I think this is a key game for both teams, just like in the sense, like for the Bearcats, obviously like your sights have aimed higher. Like the team's sights have probably always been to win the East. Well, definitely have been. But like if like they're going to be a contender and try to like stay up there with the Florida teams who are still undefeated, like this is a game you have to win. And on the flip side, like for Tulane, like this is a game like they have to win, like because they want to make a bowl game. They got denied in the last game of the season last year, and if like they're gonna try to get that march to six, they can't really afford to be 2-4.
Yeah, S&P has them at a 5-7 win record. They're dogs in this game. They're favored fairly heavily against SMU and East Carolina, but they're only slight favorites over Tulsa and Navy. So, you know, you assume you lose those toss-ups, and you really, this game does become a must-win for them, for sure.
And just, like, based off the Memphis performance, like, albeit that was at home, too, that is something that, like, just, like, I don't know, it sticks in my mind a little bit. It's like, you at least know that Tulane is capable of something like that. Like, it probably won't happen again. But, like...
Oh, but... But your concerns are absolutely valid. I mean, Tulane, I mean, they put up the numbers this season, even against, like, let's just look at their numbers against against Ohio State. I mean, it was terrible. 100 yards, 2.3 yards per carry. Outside of Ohio State's elite defense, I mean, they're averaging something like 4 or 5 yards per carry. Like, this is, that offense can move the ball if they need to, for sure.
And like they played Wake Forest pretty tough. That was at home though, so I don't know. It's like they're a weird team. Like getting them on the road, right, and playing at home, it's like you should win all your home games.
Yeah.
And
yeah, absolutely.
And like Tulane's record in Ohio this year is pretty terrible, 0-1. So you have to
keep which is a good
streak.
Sign.
You have to keep that streak going.
Exactly. Yeah, do you have any thoughts on the game, or do you want to get to the rest of the conference?
I'm really interested to see if like how much they work Warren. It's like you would think if this game is closer, it'd be like the Ohio game where he gets like 85% of the carries, and the rest. Then when he's out, they just go 5 wide. So it'd be kind of interesting to see that, because it's like you have to get him the ball. And he's been really great. It'd be interesting to see if somebody like tries to scheme against him. So we really haven't seen that so far, which is a major credit to like the play calling and the offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it will be interesting to see what they do with Warren. I think the offense in general, I'm also a little interested to see what they do. I mean, to your point, they could play some ball control offense, but this is Tulane is giving up something like 300 to 400 yards through the air per game. I mean, they're 117th in the nation in passing defense. Like, it could be a situation where they just, you know, they let Des Ritter just pick apart the defense with his arm. But then, like, to your point, what you made earlier, you know, if it's a close game and you're trying to play the war of attrition on the ground, you know, how much do they lean on Warren? How much do they let Jakari Robinson, lead that offensive line? How much do they trust him to do so? I mean, we talked about he did well in the second half against UConn, but Tulane's defense is a different animal. It'll be interesting to see what Denbrock has cooked up for Saturday.
And at least by the S&P rankings, Tulane's defense is the best defense they've played this season. So it'll be getting like a, I guess, your best challenge defensively.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But still, having said that, I think they're going to win and win kind of comfortably.
Yeah, if you're not playing like a Tulane type of offensive system with that slow it down offense, I could see UC being like a double digit favorite in this game. But just because of like the lack of possessions that both teams will have, that's probably one of the reasons why it is only like a touchdown. But yeah, that UC should win this game fairly comfortably, no matter what the scoreboard really says at the end of the day.
It's, to be honest, I think like opening at 8 and then going down to 7.5 is really not enough. I'm kind of surprised UC's not a double-digit favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm kind of in that same boat as well.
It's, really, they only got 17 against UConn. Yeah. I think Vegas is sleeping on the Bearcats.
Yeah.
Because of what they've covered in every game this season. I don't remember what the spread was against Ohio.
Ohio, I want to say like 13.
Okay, then
does that sound right?
Then they didn't cover
anything. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. I have no idea if that's a real number or not.
I don't know if it was. We should have looked.
And I'm too lazy. I'm too lazy. You can look it up. I'll just jibber jabber for 5 minutes, but
let's look at the league real quick. Kind of a big week last week with a couple of the teams played some at least marquee names. I guess I'm counting Pitt as a marquee name, even though Pitt is not very good. Central Florida like beat the hell out of them, 45-14. They just continue to look like this, like the clear, like best group of five team.
Yeah, Pitt is not a very good ACC team, but they are an ACC team, and yeah, Central Florida did really whatever they wanted to do with them, and they could have probably won that game by about 50.
And like Mackenzie Milton, after like that one shaky game, is like decided to be like really great.
Yeah,
which is I guess pretty good if like you can do that. Like, Temple played Boston College, like pretty tough, a high scoring game. They go down though. 45-35. A solid effort from Temple. But I think it just goes to show, like, they've kind of fallen off the last couple of years. Like, they're in, like, their valley after having, like, the major peak with Matt Rhule. And, like, losing a lot of their key guys. Their rest of their guys just haven't recovered yet.
Yeah, Temple, I mean, they rank 24th in S&P Plus defense, but they are just god awful in every other statistical category. I mean, they are definitely going to test UC in a few weeks after that bye week, but I don't know, they've got issues on that other side of the ball. Anything outside of the defense, and they just And even they gave up 45 points in Boston College on Saturday, so maybe their defense isn't even that good.
Armstead is still, he's like had a really great year.
But yeah.
East Carolina won a thrilling game against Old Dominion, 37-35. Is East Carolina decent? Or?
No. No. They're bad. They're really bad. They should have lost to ODU.
Virginia
East Carolina is terrible.
Virginia Tech couldn't beat ODU.
Well, I had ODU. They should have won that game, bastards.
Yeah, East Carolina scored a field goal with under a minute left to pull off the come-from-behind victory.
Yeah, East Carolina is, like very, very bad. They've got Temple, Houston, Central Florida, Memphis coming up, and they end with Cincinnati and NC State. So yeah, we're gonna see exactly what East Carolina is in a few weeks.
Yeah, I was trying to be optimistic for them.
Don't be. They're East Carolina. They did it themselves.
And the only other league game last week besides UC UConn was SMU played somebody nobody cares about. This week, Houston and Tulsa play the Thursday night ESPN game, which is like even more depressing.
God damn it.
Like the Temple, like Tulsa. Why is Tulsa playing all these Thursday night games?
Exposure, I guess? I don't know.
Do you think?
Yeah, UC only has one weeknight game this year, and Tulsa has had like what, like three? Like this would be their third? You're right. It seems like they've had a ton.
I think just because they were 2 weeks apart. And then they get like the Friday night game next week against South Florida.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I knew they had a couple in the row. Yeah, they had last week, this week, and then next week their weeknights.
Like,
what the hell?
Yeah, three Tulsa games on ESPN. Like how good the Tulsa was. Like weren't they terrible last year? How did this happen? Tulsa was like 2-10 last season. Like, why did they get three primetime games in a row?
I still like go. I still debate about that because like so this week's Tulane game is a toss up between ESPN2 and ESPNU, depending on where ESPN wants to put it. But it's a nooner, and everyone was focusing on the fact that, oh, it's a nooner for homecoming, which, like, yeah, if you're going to the game, I totally get that point. You know, I don't like noon games either. But they could potentially be on ESPN2, like, on a Saturday. When was the last time that happened? Like, so Tulsa's really getting away with murder with some of these ESPN spots.
The game is on ESPNU, though. Disappointing. But for homecoming...
Oh, it actually got called... Damn it! Now I'm even more upset.
For homecoming, though, I don't know. I don't really like noon games for homecoming.
I agree, because I totally... That's what I was saying. If you're going to the game, nooners suck because they have the homecoming parades at, like, 9 a.m. People have to get there at, like, 7 to get ready to tailgate before all the homecoming festivities. Like, an afternoon homecoming game makes a lot of sense. I was just kind of banking on that ESPN2 slot.
But then when you look at the TV schedule, which everything's driven by, Central Florida plays the night game on ESPNU. They host SMU. Like, Memphis has the late night CBS Sportsnet spot. The 3:30 spot on CBS Sportsnet is Air Force and Navy. So, Air Force, they have like some sort of contract with CBS Sportsnet?
Yeah, Navy does. I don't know. I think you're right. I think it is Air Force and Navy that both have CBS Sportsnet.
Yeah, so it just sucks that you got squeezed to a noon game for homecoming.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, I'm okay. I'm not going to be at that game, but yeah. I'm happy to watch it on any tablet I potentially have instead of CBS Sportsnet where I have to pirate the damn channel. They don't have an app.
Even though it's 2018.
It is. And apparently the company is owned by CBS. That streams March Madness games on the March Madness app, but they can't do it for CBS Sportsnet. So that is fun. What's next?
East Carolina goes to Temple. In the ESPN News game of the week. At Temple, 11.5 point favorite. They opened at 13, down to 11.5. You feel that East Carolina optimism?
if 5 minutes ago wasn't any indication, yeah, I think Temple wins by like at least two touchdowns. East Carolina is really not good. Like, they had that flash in the pan against North Carolina, but North Carolina is almost as bad as East Carolina.
I think they stay within 11.5. I'm going to ride East Carolina for some reason.
At least
in the point spread.
Die with East Carolina. Go for it.
They'll lose, but they'll lose by like 10. Navy plays Air Force on the road. Navy's actually a favorite, so I guess Air Force must be bad.
Yeah, I guess I'll go with Navy. I have no idea. Those military games are just such toss-ups, it seems like.
South Florida goes to UMass for some reason. South Florida is a 14-point favorite, but the big thing is the over-under in this game is 70.5. That is a lot.
That is very much a lot of points. 70? Where do you think that's coming from?
Now I'm looking, trying to find how bad UMass's defense is. They must be very bad.
Oh, they are very bad. They gave up 63 points to FIU.
Oh, they just gave up 58. They gave up 58 points to Ohio. 31 points to terrible Charlotte. Like 63 to FIU, as you mentioned. 55 to BC. Like, you think 55 to BC would be like the down point. I'm letting you know it's like only gotten worse.
But, yeah, that must be that, it must be all South Florida points is what they're thinking.
Like, then on the flip side, like, South Florida, like, it's been so unimpressive the last couple of games against East Carolina and Illinois. They haven't even scored 30. Like, this just seems like a crazy number.
But now, yeah, it's like weird because it's like they're like one of those teams where like they have the talent to be a lot better than they are, but it's like they're the only ones holding themselves back.
I kind of think now. I think this will be their offensive breakout game.
Now that's probably a good bet.
Now that I've realized UMass is so bad.
Yeah, I think they can. Yeah, probably win something like 49 to 21 or whatever the difference between 70 and 49 is.
If you thought 70 was high, Central Florida hosts SMU. The point spread is 24. Over under is 75.5.
Fucking what? I mean, Central Florida is really good, but there's no way SMU scores that many points. So UCF's going to score 70 of those 75 points is what they're saying.
But if you
like, Central Florida has a really good defense too. Like they shut out a team this year, 14 to Pitt and 17 to UConn. Like, I don't see SMU scoring that many points.
I really don't either. SMU's offense hasn't been like that explosive this season. Like, they only had throwing out the game against Houston Baptist, because like, who cares? They've only scored 30 once, and that was against Navy, and they did it in overtime.
Yeah, exactly. Extra time to get to 30. Like, yeah, maybe they score a couple of touchdowns, but yes, take the under, folks.
Yeah, that's insane. That final game of the week, UConn goes to disappointing Memphis. Let's see what the spread is on this game. It's 35 points for Memphis. The over-under in this game is 78.
That I can see. Because Memphis has like an elite-level offense, and Memphis has just the worst defense that ever been put on the planet Earth. Like, Memphis can probably score about 70 themselves.
Yeah,
Memphis's defense is so bad that you can could probably put up a couple of touchdowns as well. Go ahead.
I think you're right. I think Memphis could actually put up 70 points on UConn. I'm interested to see what happens in that game now. Not really.
Yeah, Brady White and Daryl Henderson are actually pretty good. It's just that defense is just terrible.
70. You thought 70 was a lot. Then we went and topped it back-to-back times.
But that one makes sense. It makes total sense. UConn is like the worst defense in football. Memphis is one of the best. And Memphis themselves has a terrible defense. So yeah, I definitely would take the over in that.
I am too. That game's gonna be something else. Do you have anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, I still have UC winning like 31-24. Let's just all lock in 31-24, and yeah, should be a good game heading into the bye week.
Yeah, heading into the bye week 6-0, it seems like it should happen.
Nick, who would have thought?
That nobody. So, thanks for joining us. If you're going to the game, have fun and go Bearcats.